Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 438 for comics originally released on December 30th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Injustice Gods Among Us Year 4 Annual Number 1. This is written by Tom Taylor, who had started the series. We've got art by a couple of different people, actually. Bruno Rinaldo is doing the pencils for the first 24 pages and the layouts for, I guess, the other, 14? Sergio Sandoval does the inks for the first 24 and finishes for a lot of the rest. And then Jordi Tarragona does the finishes for about 6 or 7 of the pages. But extra-sized books, so they needed a little bit bigger art team than usual. Have you been sticking with Injustice Gods Among Us?
Yeah, I stayed with it after the creative change, and I felt a noticeable drop in quality of the storytelling, and was really excited to see Tom Taylor come back mm-hmm. for this annual. Another thing, this is one of the rare Injustice annuals that actually matters and is worthwhile. The other previous annuals from this title were all throwaway stories that happened between previous stories that already occurred. They really weren't consequential and really felt out of sync with the book. This one is actually required reading before you get to Injustice Year 5. It was nice. Refreshing to actually have a title, a book like that, that actually mattered. And that's good stuff.
Well, and in addition to being, I think, a great part of the overall Injustice storyline, I thought this worked great just as a standalone issue.
Yeah, and to have Plastic Man. I haven't had a Plastic Man story in a long time, so it was really cool.
Well, I'm of the age that grew up on the Plastic Man cartoon, among other cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I think, a group of people just a couple of years older that were out of cartoons by the time that came on, and really don't get what the big deal with Plastic Man is sometimes. And this is the way I like Plastic Man. He's fun-loving, he's wacky, he's an ex-criminal, but he's a good guy, a little misguided at times. And man, in this universe, this Plastic Man is really living up to the full potential of his powers, both in terms of shape-shifting, color-changing, and all kinds of stuff. Typically in the comics, he rarely changes colors, if at all, and just stays with the colors that are on his costume and whatnot. But I felt they used him here and used him just brilliantly. And this is the kind of Plastic Man I like reading. He's not just a cartoonish buffoon or whatever, mm-hmm. and it's not all, literally a cartoonish style of art either.
But were you familiar with his son?
Yes, I was.
Okay. And was this a good interpretation of his son from what you know of him?
His son hasn't gotten a whole lot of time on screen. He was I don't want to say originally introduced because I'm going to get the timing of this wrong. He was Offspring in the Kingdom Come and Kingdom Aftermath type stuff titles. Okay. He was part of 1 year later, member of the Titans. I would say the story you would really want to read for backstory for this is JLA number 65 from, I think, June 2002, where he's introduced there. And it's basically, Eel O'Brien, Plastic Man, had a kid. And he and his kid, don't see much. I mean, Plastic Man, not exactly a father figure. But it was a really well-done story, primarily featuring Plastic Man and Batman, and just had some great moments in it. And this kind of played further along that relationship, or almost lack thereof, or whatnot. And it's one that, again, aside from Offspring, which is more kind of an out-of-continuity thing, Luke's in-continuity appearances are few and far between. And, frankly, this is also out-of-continuity. This is a different world.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you, I don't like the costume. I don't like Plastic Man's costume. I know it's classic, but I don't like I don't like the outfit, the little cross hatching tie and the shades. I think it of all the costumes that have been revamped, I think this is one that's overdue.
I don't like him having shorts. Having the red go all the way down on the legs, I think would work better. The goggles, glasses, or whatever are kind of iconic for him, so I think it'd be tough to change that. There's an acrobat aspect to the costume, which for a guy that was a petty criminal just doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah.
But it's an iconic design due to just kind of how old it is almost.
Yeah, yeah. I get it.
I think it could be touched up and redone and really work.
It feels a little dated, though, of that time, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, much like Superman's at time, Batman, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could revamp this one easier than they could revamp some other characters, just because he's not as iconic as Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman. And I don't think the costume needs radical changes, but just a little fine-tuning here and there.
Yeah.
But I thought he was just brilliantly used in this issue. He was the lead character. And again, it showed just the potential of his powers. It really also was good character moments throughout this. I mean, I really enjoyed this whole issue.
Oh yeah, and another thing, it cemented in place for me the meteoric rise of Tom Taylor as a top-notch writer, because he took this book, put it on the map. It's a freaking video game tie-in property, and made it into something special. Left, quality falls off. You think maybe it's just got long in the tooth. He comes back and infuses a sense, the exact sense of fun and excitement and adventure and love of characters, and let's resurrect this character and bring this person to the forefront for a while. And it doesn't take anything away from the book. It doesn't feel like it's not still moving forward. And he's able to just do that at will, and has throughout the run when he's been on it. It's just an amazing turn. I love this book.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a great issue. The art was done by, I think you said, three or four different people, and I felt they did a really good job of matching styles, because I didn't notice any kind of change or drop off at all.
Well, they had the one guy, Bruno Redondo, I think it was, doing either the pencils or the finishes for the entire issue, or the layouts, I mean,
okay.
For the parts he didn't actually pencil. So that gave it, I think, a sense of continuity visually there. And again, they got other people to kind of, similar style and match. So it's not like you turn a page and suddenly it's like, what the hell happened to the art or anything. I thought it was good art, great art throughout the whole book. And there were a couple of places where I felt the art really added to the storytelling. You know, when we've got Plastic Man doing a couple of things here and there, you know, in the Hall of Justice, outside of it in a few places, just the way it was drawn really, to me, added to the story. There were parts that had to be done very visually, and they could have, I mean, you couldn't really do some of it with captions, nor did they try, nor need to. When we've got the one shot of the Flash walking away or whatever, I had to do kind of a double take. It's like, oh, I see what's going on. That's cool. So I thought this creative team gelled very well together. Again, the continuity in the art was great. This is one that, I think Tom Taylor set a high bar with this title from the get-go. And the creative team on the writing that came after him is doing a good job, but he did a great job and a hard act to follow. So I think it went down, but I don't think it went bad.
Oh, no. It's still a book I read.
Mm-hmm.
But it just doesn't have that special something that made it be a top of the stack read. Each and every time it came out.
No, I agree with that entirely. This is the one that's really put Tom Taylor on the map. And again, him coming back for an issue, doing a done in one that's going to kind of launch the next and final year of the storyline. He just, again, did a terrific job on this.
And I was reading that solicit for year five, and it sounds like this is the it sounds like it's the final season of the book, but then it also said the final leading up to the video game. Is that the existing video game, or is there a sequel coming out?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know of a new one.
When I read it again, I don't keep up with video game news, so I don't really know if there's a new Injustice coming out. But if it's leading up to a sequel to the video game, I wonder if they will continue it then after that. But it's a good place to end. I know sales have kind of been falling off anyway, so I get it. But I would hate to lose this book. I love its place in DC.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, this is a very fun take on kind of a combination of the old school post-crisis pre-Flashpoint universe and some aspects of post-Flashpoint. I mean, it's very iconic takes on these characters, and then it's taken them and just nudged them in directions they just couldn't go before. Because it's a standalone universe, they've got the ability to tell some stories you just can't tell if you need to be using these characters in perpetuity for the next couple of decades or whatever. It's a great series. I don't want to see it go away, but I do want to see it have a nice sense of closure too.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this issue really showed everything that's right with this title. It's a great standalone issue. If you've read No Injustice Gods Among Us, I think you can come in and read this and enjoy it perfectly.
If you like Plastic Man.
If you like Plastic Man, you've got to read this.
Yeah.
It's one of the best Plastic Man stories I think we've gotten in a long time, unless you only like the very cartoonish style and those kinds of storylines. If you want Plastic Man as a member of the Justice League, as a stand-up superhero kind of a guy, this is it.
Yeah.
For me, this was an A+, perfect score. I loved this issue.
Yeah, I loved it too. And I mulled over the A+. I got a little bit of a problem with the $5 price tag. I know it's 40 pages, but I think this is going to be the rare exception where I overlook that price because it was such a fun issue. It's worth $5. This comic is worth $5.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of comics you would say that about. And so, I'm going to give it the A+ as well. Cool. But I was right on the fence.
No, and I can understand that. I mean, again, they gave us a solid amount of story. They didn't skimp on the art or anything. It didn't feel like they cut corners or anything. And the fact that you got a full story, to me, helps give it that full value for the money. But it's one of those things where, you know, the price of a book does matter. It certainly, at times, has influenced my decisions on rating and stuff. Not often, but, you know, again, from time to time. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is All New Wolverine number 3. This is featuring an All New Wolverine. How much of Wolverine have you been following of late over, say, the last, well, since his death, whenever that was earlier, I guess last year?
Yeah, didn't care. This is Tom Taylor. And as we've established, I'm like a deadhead following the Grateful Dead on tour. I'm following Tom Taylor to whatever book he does and checking that out. And so I hopped on the all new Wolverine, not giving a whiff about X-23 at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he made me love this character and enjoy this world. And this is my favorite X book. And it's been really solid. All three issues have been really solid, and this is a really good one. I really liked it.
Well, and this has, to me, this is a title or an issue certainly where the writing really stood out a bit more than the art. The art's good, but not brilliant. There are a few places where it almost looked a little cartoony at times. Not many, but just enough. But the sensibility of this book gives it a bit of a unique identity. First off, I'm a huge fan of the Taskmaster. So him being in here, that was just cool. And then there's this whole bit where Wolverine is basically getting told she's a bit of a pacifist or whatever. And she's like, you're telling me this while I'm surrounded by all the people I just beat up. It's like just on the flat out surface. That's ludicrous or whatever.
Yeah.
Those kinds of moments are throughout this. We've got three sisters that are in this this storyline. Each of them are unique and entertaining and interesting. And they could have easily just blurred together and been interchangeable, and they were not.
Yeah, and the Taskmaster is really interesting in this, and there's been books where I've read him and not liked him, he was so forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
He was an interesting character in here, And just in the few panels that he was on screen and the dialogue, you know, he reminded the audience of his power set. He established who he was, what he was there. I mean, and it was just so organically done and well done.
Yeah.
That I really, really liked that character. It was great.
Well, and it's a scene that's got exposition that's needed if you're unfamiliar with the character. But like you said, it's done fluidly. It makes sense in context to the story. And it's given out very concisely to where you get what you need, but you don't get just this ton of exposition.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that makes books accessible. Now, there were a couple of things throughout the course of this issue that were questions that were raised and not answered. But I'm expecting we'll get those answers in a future issue. And if not, maybe it doesn't matter that much. But there is an aspect of this is part of a larger story. And that was one of the places I felt this could have done a little better. Because frankly, not a ton happens in this issue. Got a couple of fights, a little bit of minor plot progression. But it also didn't bother me because it was a very fun read with a lot of good character moments. And none of this felt like it was just filler.
We had characters die and resurrected. We had car chases. We had a cameo by a major Marvel character at the end. We had a lot of stuff going on in this.
I think you could boil down the high-level plot of this to a fight at the beginning, a car chase, and then an introduction at the end. Now, there's more to it than that. But most of the more to it is character moments, is execution, not plot. And it was really good execution. So for me, the fact that it didn't have a lot of major plot points isn't a problem. It's when you don't have any major plot points and you really don't have anything else to hang your hat on.
Well, I just want to clarify, you're not saying it's a decompressed story, because I think there's way more stuff going on here than like a Bendis.
Absolutely. You are issue. Totally okay. correct. Okay. If we were to compare it to the Moon Knight run where it takes six issues for him to get up and walk across the room, or Loeb's run with, I guess it was the Red Hulk or whatever, where pretty much there were only like four scenes in the entire first issue or something, and not much happened in them other than, you know, some big, you know, fight scene, explosion-y type stuff.
It's not that.
But it's something that, again, the fight scenes have character moments. They have things we need to understand the story. They've got, it's not just, hey, here's a mindless fight. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to really just stop and look at just, again, plot point type stuff, it's not heavy on that. But it's done in a way that the execution is solid enough that you really don't feel ripped off by that. And it's a very solid, enjoyable read.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, if you hadn't read 1 and 2, mm-hmm. you just pick this up, you would enjoy this issue. And you wouldn't want to not read 4 because of the way it ends. But it's a satisfying single issue experience.
Absolutely. I liked the way it ended because it also showed Tom Taylor's ability to really kind of turn a phrase in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it again, he's a writer worth following. And some of his books I've liked better than others. None of them I've hated. There are some I just think he's clicked with a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But he can take characters, make them more interesting than a lot of other writers can, and he is actively working towards keeping the books accessible to new readers. Because like you said, third issue, at least three of these characters, if you hadn't read issues 1 and 2, you would have no clue who they were, because that's the only place they ever showed. Right. Yet I think you could come out of here getting a sense of who they are, the relevant part of their backstory, and I think even starting to care about them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the job of the writer.
Yeah, I mean, I loved him on Injustice. He wrote my favorite Iron Man volume with the Superior run. I followed into this. He made me care about this. And I will be checking out that Green Lantern thing that he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no interest in that before. So so far he's been able to make me care about things I didn't think I would like. And that's the mark of a good writer, to be able to, a la Mark Waid with Archie.
You know,
I didn't think I would like that. Not a character I care about, able to change my mind. That's tough to do in a very cynical industry of a very cynical readership of comics with people with predisposed ideas about what they read and what they like, it's tough to change people's minds.
Oh, absolutely.
And to be able to do that like he has consistently with me is impressive.
Well, one of the things I found with Mark Waid is he's just a hardcore comic book fan. He loves these characters. And I really don't know that much about Tom Taylor, the person, but his stuff reads as if he is deeply entrenched in these universes, that he knows who the Taskmaster is, that he knows who the Justice League is, all these characters and whatnot. He cares about this version of Wolverine, not just somebody who's just writing something to get a paycheck.
Yeah, you wouldn't need the editorial oversight that some of these other writers seem to need, because it doesn't seem like they know the character as well. We notice that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And with Charles Soule and the Daredevil character, for instance, last week. He seems to know these characters well enough that, you know, he's not going to make those errors in characterization that we've been seeing lately from the big two. And I think that's applaudable as well. And it's nice when that happens.
Well, he seems to show respect for the readers. At one point, Wolverine breaks off from some of the characters and says, "Hey, I'll find you." Couple of pages, scene or two later, she's found them. And they're like, "Well, how did you find us?" And it gives a nice, quick, succinct explanation that, oh, that's reasonable. That makes perfect sense.
And in previous volumes, there might have been a throwaway line about, "Oh, I'm the best at what I do."
Yeah.
And that would have been all you got. But we got an actual, here's how I found you, and more people will be able to find you as well.
Exactly. And if I could do it, you know, there may be guys behind me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought this was a lot of fun. The art by David Lopez was good. Not something I would read a book solely for, but certainly told the story well. Also, David Neverott helped on the art. But it told the story well, but there were a few places where I felt they could have done a little bit more in terms of expressiveness or whatnot on a few of the characters.
Yeah, I mean, I have to go back to the fact that he's been able to take this character that I didn't care about, make me like and root for this character, enjoy the heck out of my read, and look anxiously forward to the next issue in the line. I can't ask for much more from a comic than that. I just had so much fun. I thought the art was good. I think it doesn't lead the headlines, but I thought it was very, very well done. For me, this is an A.
Cool. Again, for the art, for me, it wasn't that it was bad, but there were a couple of places where the eyes were just a little big and a few things like that, that I think it could have been a little bit better than it was, but it told the story well. I was able to keep track of everything going on. It was above average art and stuff, and it had a sense of fluidity and movement to it, to where it didn't feel like it was just boring snapshots on the page. But to me, the writing is the big thing here. I like this character. She's been well used in All New X-Men and the past couple of titles she's had as solo books, X-23, etc. So I went in already liking the character. For me, this was a B+. I thought it was really good. It's something that some people may write off as just, well, it's not the real Wolverine. It's like, well, no, fine, it's not, but it's still a really good book. So, well worth checking out.
No, definitely.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes.
Now, technically, this did not come out the week of December 30th. It came out beginning of the month. It is Barrier by PanelSyndicate.com. It's by Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin, and Munsta Vincente. This is the creative team behind The Private Eye. I'll be honest, I knew nothing about this when we picked it other than the creative team. That was enough. This got off to a slow start for me.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I'm not sure what story they're telling here. All I know is it's going to be an unconventional drama about violence, language, and illegal immigration.
And you didn't find that out until the back matter.
Now, that actually I found out from their website when you download it. That's all I knew going in. So, you know, we get to the thing, and we get just a couple of slow pages here and there. Not bad, but, you know, not, okay, I know where the story's going, or here's the premise, or anything. And then we've got one or two pages where they just essentially do a stop, a snapshot of the character, where they're from, and a few things like that, that almost kind of sort of seem like opening credits for a movie or whatnot. And I'm going to say a Western movie because of just the setting here at the border state and whatnot. But then it gets to the scene where some of this is in Spanish. And in fairness, they did mention that on the website. I just kind of glossed over it and didn't think anything of it.
Right.
I studied Spanish in high school and obviously learned very little of it beyond like taco, enchilada, burrito, you know, the
how they teach Spanish still in high school?
I don't know if they teach it still in high school. It's been a few years for me. But when they hit the whole part happening in Spanish, suddenly I'm hearing kind of the Charlie Brown voices.
Yep.
And not any actual dialogue.
Exactly.
And then we get to a montage section where time is passing. It's like, okay, I get it. I'm not seeing what the point to this is. And I was just getting a little, almost, I'm not bounced out of the story, but a little lost and disconnected with this. And I think this is an issue that is going to have probably three or four very different reading experiences. Mm-hmm. One, if you're like me and know English and not Spanish. Another, if you know Spanish and not English. A third, if you know both. And maybe a fourth, if you don't know either or just plain illiterate. And up until right before the end, I'm like, it's kind of okay. But then it took a bit there at the end that re-engaged my interest. And I'm like, okay, based on what you show me so far, and then this last little bit, I now have a justification in my mind for why you did the English and the Spanish bit, how that could really play into making the story very interesting next time. Much more so than if you'd just done the kind of the bracketed translated text shtick that a lot of books do.
Right.
Because prior to that, I was thinking, damn it, just translate the text for me. I'm not going to go pull up Google and translate it.
Yeah, exactly. and Brian K. Vaughan is guilty of this. This is not the first time he's done this. And I noticed it in We Stand on Guard. You know, he had a French character and neglected to bracket any of his dialogue and translate it for us. And it was a minor annoyance at that point. And I thought, okay, I can see he's doing something creatively here by allowing the visual storytelling to convey what he needs to say. You don't need to know the language, you know, and I'm trying to roll with it. In Paper Girls, there's whole sections of alien language, not bracketed, not translated. And at this point, I'm starting to get a little annoyed at his new little toy that he's rolling out. And then this, where it felt a third to a half was in Spanish. I know it wasn't.
There was significant chunks.
It was significant chunks, and it's a 50-plus page story, and so you get a lot of pages, and so there's a lot here for the money, especially since I pulled a John Mayo and didn't pay a dime for it. I sampled it for free.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because I was going to point out that this is one of those cases where the price factored into my assessment of the book. Because I was able to get it for free, and really all, and legitimately so, they're giving it away if you want to do that. Now, if you want to pay, you can, and I encourage you to do so if you feel that way. But it's hard not to get a positive return on the investment when all it cost me was the time it took to download it and read it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I shelled out $2.99, $3.99, or $4.99 for this, I'd have been a lot harder on this book, because it's like, well, there's entire scenes I can't read. You know, what's up with that?
That's exactly right, because as I'm fuming at the mass quantities of Spanish that is on here, and I, at this point, I just throw my hands up and I say, you know what? All this part of the book, none of it matters. The only thing I need to know is this is an immigrant from Mexico, and he's going to be interacting with the main character that actually matters at some point, because I can't read any of this. None of it matters what he's doing. He's obviously just trying to get across the border. So none of the language matters at all. So who cares? And so I just dismiss it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we get to that scene you're talking about at the end. And I think, okay, now maybe there's something more at play here with the language. There's going to be maybe three different languages at play here and trying to get your point. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be an agonizing read.
Even if they don't bring a third language in, these two characters that have now met, that speak different languages, they now certainly have something to talk about.
Yes.
And they may not be able to.
Yes.
And those of us on the English side of things are going to be favoring one character. people who are reading the Spanish part, because that's their native language, are going to favor the other character. And again, I think it makes for potentially very different reading experiences. Now, if one's better or worse than the other, I really couldn't say, because I couldn't partake of all of it.
Now, also worth the money and the investment is the Marquez Martin art, which is as good as it was in Private Eye.
Yes.
It's beautifully detailed. The Vincente coloring is vibrant and beautiful, and it's just a wonderful spectacle visually. And I hate to say it, but where it falls a little flat is in the writing. And, you know, I blame most of that at his choice not to translate the Spanish. And maybe in the coming issues, all will be revealed and I will understand the method to his madness. But at the time of reading, it is annoying. And you feel cheated. And I feel cheated. I don't want to speak for you, but
I was
going to
say,
because
I was annoyed, but I didn't feel cheated.
I just felt like, well, these are wasted pages. If I'm not going to be able to read them, then just tell me what I need to know in a couple panels, and I then spend some more time on the characters that I can read.
Again, I'm going on the assumption, and maybe it pans out this way, maybe it doesn't, but that these two characters, he's basically told the story intentionally this way to divide the audience.
I don't know. I mean, he didn't. Now, with Private Eye, you were able to choose your language, and you could download it in a variety of languages.
Uh-huh.
I didn't check to see if you could do that with Barrier. So if it's
you could
also
not.
Being, if it's being translated in multiple languages, then that would kind of go out the window.
The only one I saw was the English-Spanish version.
Okay.
So I'm taking it as a very intentional decision by the creative team to divide the audience between the English speakers and the Spanish speakers.
Yeah.
And have them essentially get to know one side more than the other. And there will be that third camp that can read both and presumably just pick based on who they like, not what they can relate to.
I looked at Barrier as the barrier between Mexico and Texas. You know, that was kind of what I was thinking it was as I was, you know, going, but then it became, well, it's actually, okay, it's the language barrier, or maybe it's both. And it's, so it's working on that level as well. And oh, that's cool. I mean, it's definitely worth reading. If this would have been a $4.99 book, I'd be jumping up and down and pounding my fist on the table about the language thing.
Oh, absolutely. But, even if it had only been a $2.99.
Yeah,
I paid for stuff that I can't read a lot of.
99 cents or, you know, a couple of bucks for this first issue, it's definitely worth it. I really think the art's amazing. I think Marquez Martin is fantastic. I gotta trust Brian K. Vaughan because of his track record is pretty good with me. I don't really have a lot of stuff that I dislike of his. Some I like better than others. And this, he probably has a plan that is just not completely out there yet. I want to stick with this. Of course, I won't get the email because I didn't pay anything for this one. So I'm either going to have to go back and pay, shell out a little bit of something or check back this site every once in a while.
Well, for me, this was kind of a swing and a miss. It was something that I like the creative team. Again, like you said, the art's great. But if I'd paid money for this, I'd have been upset. Since I didn't, that is factoring in this issue's favor. Knowing the creative team, having read The Private Eye and some of the other stuff they've done, I'm going on the assumption this is building up to something and this was set up for that and trying to get us into an intentional mindset. Since it can be gotten for free legitimately, I'll be back for more. Now, probably not the instant the next installment's released, but eventually I'll come back and check the rest out. But it's certainly not something I'm going to, you know, put a reminder to, oh, go check that website or something like that. I didn't like it enough. I didn't connect to the material enough.
Well, if the second issue is half Spanish, I think I'll be done. I don't think I'll stick around. I mean, if it was to set that up for, you know, to set up the division in issue one and then tell a story that I can follow in issue two completely, then I'm all in. I don't want to play this game through a 10-issue series.
What if, I'm not sure it's 10 issues. I was thinking it was 5, but I could be wrong.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I read it's much shorter. I think it's like 4 or 6 or something.
Whatever. What if, though, the rest of the story has these two characters basically, I don't say literally joined at the hip, but you know what I mean. They're sticking with each other throughout the run of this five-issue arc. She's only speaking English. He's only speaking Spanish. But so you're never having a scene that you can't understand any of, but you're always having a scene you can't understand all of, and they can't understand each other either.
Well, they did that in Trillium. Jeff Lemire did that in Trillium over at Vertigo, and I found it maddening over there as well. Didn't like that one bit. So I'm not very forgiving with that sort of thing. So
no, I can understand.
I probably couldn't handle it if the whole thing was like that. But it is pretty to look at, and the price was right. So I'm going to be minus after all this. Yeah, I'm still going to be minus.
I went with a B, and some of that is just on the faith of where I think they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I was probably reading a little bit more into their future plans than certainly they showed us. But again, it's I support what they're doing at Panel Syndicate. I appreciate the ability to get it for free, and that they're trying to build essentially something of a meritocracy. If you like it, pay what you want. And if you don't, well, you can still read it.
And they're going to get, because of the deal he made with Robert Kirkman, he traded him the rights to print The Private Eye, that Image, because he said he was never going to print it. So he traded him those rights in exchange for an exclusive issue of Walking Dead that can only be downloaded from Panel Syndicate.
I read that a little bit differently, in so much as, yes, I think they're going to get the exclusive issue that's only a Panel Syndicate of The Walking Dead, but I took that as kind of the carrot that Kirkman was putting in front of them to get the Private Eye printed.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Well, you made it sound, though, like it was more Brian K. Vaughan wheeling and dealing.
Oh, no.
Whereas I think it was more Kirkman doing that. Either way, it's a win.
Yeah. Win-win for both sides.
Yeah. And if having the Walking Dead issue gets them some more visibility, I think that's awesome.
Oh, my God. Will it ever?
Well, maybe it will. Maybe it won't. I mean, a lot of people may just be getting the collected edition. They may not find out. I mean, this was the first I'd heard about it. You know, I don't know when it's coming out or whatever. But, you know, hopefully it gets them some more traffic to their website. They've got some great things. Again, for me, this was a swing and a miss, but I applaud the story I think they're trying to tell. We'll know at some point, maybe, how it pans out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So this is the final shipment of the year. Last couple of weeks, I've been bemoaning the fact that I was not current. I am now current.
What? All right. Just in time for the year to start over.
Barely in time. Taking some time off from work certainly helped on that. Man, there was a ton of stuff to read. And I'll be honest, after a while, it all both kinds of blurs together, and it seems like, didn't I just read a previous issue of this? It's coming out again. And some of that, I think, is some of these books are just coming out a bit too fast.
Yeah, you know, this. The new Superman Lois and Clark book, I'm really loving that. The third issue came out this week, and I really love it, except each issue has a couple of pages at the end that just...
They're
really
setting something else up, yeah.
They're setting something else up that's not really going anywhere. It doesn't seem to really be that interesting or critical. And I'd almost just rather, you know, just save that as a preamble for when you do get around to telling that story. And tell me more of these two.
Yeah.
They'll use those pages for this. That's the only thing I can say bad about this, because I really – this is a great book. This is my favorite Superman. I mean, I like a lot of Superman. I'm liking more Superman than I ever have. You know, like this. I like American Alien. I like the standalone book. There's tons of good Superman stuff going on right now. And after a kind of a dearth of not enjoying really any of it. So it's been good for me. I don't know about longtime Superman fans, but I've really enjoyed him.
I've been reading Superman since late 70s, early 80s, off the rack continuously. And part of it is the Lois and Clark one goes back to the pre-crisis Superman. I like him.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of old home week or whatever there. But it's also a really good storyline and really good title and different status quo for those characters. I do agree that the subplot couple of pages that are disconnected from everything else going on, it just seems like non sequiturs in the individual issues. They're going to build something, but so slowly it'll be like, who cares? At least for me. But you are right that there's just a surprising amount of some really good stuff around DC what gets me is the stuff that I'm really gravitating towards. Lois and Clark, Injustice, the Arkham Knight stuff.
I know where you're going.
It's not in the main universe.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm enjoying Batman and Robin Eternal and Robin War, which are in the main universe. So it's not like there's none of it there.
Right.
But there's something just kind of bizarre there.
Yeah, there's something about their standard fare that has lost its luster for me. And so, you know, I'm finding these books, these stories, and the stuff of Vertigo more appealing to myself. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Well, and we'll get into some of this in the early comic spotlight, I'm sure. But I think 2015 was not a banner year for DC.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they really need to improve their game. But I've been saying that for quite some time.
Yeah.
Whereas for Marvel, it was a bizarre year with everything stopping, starting, and restarting and stuff, thanks to Secret Wars. But it was a good year.
At least sales-wise.
I think even story-wise, they had a lot of good stuff. Some of it was just in a pocket universe for half the year. Image, I think, had some fun stuff. It's just, it's going to be interesting to see what 2016 holds for us and how things go there. But like I said, we'll talk more about that in the yearly comic spotlight. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
No, that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Swamp Thing number 1 from DC, Obi-Wan and Anakin number 1 from Marvel, and Star Trek Starfleet Academy number 2 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.